Achtung! Was für ein Move! Nächste Chance! Was für ein Pass zur Mitte! 1-0! Und der nächste Fight am Eis entbrennt! Hier entladen sich die Emotionen! Da haben wir doch noch was, um mit der Zunge zu schnalzen!
Folge 44 von Hockey O'Clock mit Martin Pfanner bringt das große Interview mit Meistermacher Petri Matikainen. Hydrofair war AV19 GM Viktor Selig im Interview und Puls24-Experte Greg Holst, der über Titel, Tränen und das TV-Experten-Dasein spricht. Das und noch viel mehr jetzt bei The Season is over. We got a champion and I'm so happy that the two-time championship winning head coach of Klagenfurt is now on Hockey O'Clock to talk everything Karate, everything as regards the championship, everything about his journey and the team's journey. It's none other than Petri Matikainen, and coach, I'm so glad that you're taking the time for the podcast.
Thank you. I'm so happy still at the moment, and I'm really glad to be on this show.
Coach, I said it in the intro, you're a two-time championship winning head coach. How does that sound to your ears or in your ears when you think about it?
Well, I don't know if it's still a reality to me, you know, in a way that I haven't been thinking that. I just try to take care of my team and try to get them better. And what comes, but it was a bit surprised that we grew so much. Everybody knows how hard it is to win two in a row. You know, one can be done maybe, you know, but two in a row is something special. That's for sure. But you know, I'm looking for the next one.
Before we talk about the next one and how you might get there, lead me through the past couple of days. Obviously, on Tuesday, it became reality that you got your second championship. We're recording this on a Sunday afternoon. This podcast is going to see the day of light on Tuesday. So how had the past 4.5 days been for you personally?
Well, you know, you get the unreal feeling that finally the season is over and we're the winners, and you get kind of a relief and happiness for the guys and yourself and your staff. That's the first thing. And then, like, we were sitting in the bus in the downstairs and guys were partying upstairs and we were talking about the season, going through the season. And I remember me saying many times that, hey, could it be, is this real? That did we really got it? And so that actually that shows that how deep me and my staff was in it also, that we didn't let go before it really the season is over. You know, that's the big thing for as a coach, that you don't start thinking ahead. I said to the staff that I stopped working with this team not a second before the season is over. Doesn't matter what happens. And that's, you know, that's me in a way. So it was a big relief and big happiness in the bus. And we got here 5:00. I gave an interview to the local guys over here. And then, you know, I was so unprepared in a way that I didn't bring any money with me or nothing. You know, I was just on it that this is just the one game and we go on. And I live 3.5 kilometers away from the rink. And at 6:00, I was watching the guys there partying a little bit. And I said to myself, now it's the coach's time to go home. And, you know, I walked home 6:00 in the morning with my t-shirt on, winning t-shirt on, because I didn't have any money or anything. I didn't want to take a taxi or anything. I wanted to walk home and really alone, no one driving in the city. And, you know, the birds were going on and sun was started to come up and I was just enjoying that 3.5 kilometers. And I got home maybe 6:40 and then I went to bed for a little while, but that's the first night. And then, of course, we can't have such a parties and stuff like that. But, you know, the reality comes to you when it, you know, the second day, of course, you're tired of all that season and all that relief. And I really slept well on the next night. And then we had some exit meetings here at the rink and little celebration at the city hall and this and that. So that's the way it has been going on. And actually, yesterday was the first day that we didn't have anything going on. And today, so, but you know, the feeling comes to you such a satisfaction of what we have achieved together.
Now, of course, you had yesterday as that one day where nothing happened, and then the day after another journalist keeps bugging you. So I'm really, really sorry for stealing your time.
Okay.
On the other hand, I'm very happy that you take your time. I remember one of the interviews that you gave us during the playoff run where you said you always sleep well before the day of a game, but you never sleep well after a game.
Yeah.
How does it look after winning a championship? And I mean, you had that long bus ride. You had the you had to walk home. Did you sleep well on Tuesday to Wednesday, or was there still too much adrenaline in your body?
Not that good, you know. I maybe 3 hours I slept, but you know, it was okay. But yeah, you're right. You know, I don't sleep that well after the game. I'm so enthusiastic kind of a guy, person. Maybe it doesn't show sometimes on the bench because I want to keep my cool. But after the game at home, it's hard to get my body down. And usually the next night, I really do sleep well. But that's the way I am. And I remember one Premier League coach, Everton's coach, said that I have hard time of sleeping after the ball match, and everything goes through me, and it's the same thing with me. And after that, when I get that game under the way, you know, over my brain, and I know what to do next, then I leave it alone, kind of. Then I can sleep. Then I can kind of relax. Okay, now I'm focusing on the next. So it's kind of a both, that it's a psychological kind of a, you have to find an answer that is satisfaction to you, then you can go on with the life. So it's maybe more than that, more than only the adrenaline, but it's only also that I need answer to myself, which has satisfaction that I know what to do next. Then I can leave it behind.
Now, a lot of things are happening. Obviously, you had to celebrate the championship. Obviously, there have been exit interviews. Obviously, at one point, you're going to start preparations for the upcoming season. But as yesterday was one of the days where there was, quote unquote, nothing to do, how do you relax? How does Petri Matikainen look like when he's not at the rink, when he's not preparing for a game, when he's not trying to motivate his players, when he's just on his own?
Well, yesterday, you know, I woke up at maybe 6:36 or something like that, and had a cup of coffee. And you know what I did? I was at the rink at 7:30, not to coach, not to work, but it was work for myself. I was at the gym, you know, for 45, 50 minutes. And then I had a little sauna and bath, and you know, that I need some time for my body, because it you know, you ruin your body in a way that you don't do physical stuff. So that's what I did. And then we had lunch at home, and then I laid around in the balcony. It was really nice weather, just laid around a little bit and had a little nap there, and nothing much. I want to chill. I never have time to chill. So I was just chilling, and then I went for a little walk in the afternoon later on, and so on. Nothing special. I think the best life is to me is that I can have a little workout, and I take care of my body, and then I maybe read something or listen some podcast, or maybe watch a little bit of other league hockey or something if I want to, or a movie or something, just a I'm a very regular guy in a way, but I'm very enthusiastic in coaching what I do. I really take it seriously, but not like head seriously 24/7. I also can chill and laugh, you know.
Now, we always talk about players and we always talk about the toll that a long season is taking on their bodies, but because you just mentioned it, we know that the mental aspect of the sport can and almost always will be brutal, and it's so tough to deal with it. But when speaking about the physical aspect of a coach, most often we see coaches standing around, quote unquote, and no offense here, on the bench. But being a coach during a long season, all those bus rides, all those games, how big is the physical toll on a coach, and how do you try to get through it? Because you mentioned the workout, you mentioned the bath, you mentioned the sauna. How important is that for you, and how dangerous is a season for a coach from a physical standpoint?
It's really crucial that you take care of yourself. You know, we stand around behind the bench and we are shielded there. So we take bullets all the time to our chest in a way, depending how the team plays. That's the way I feel. And then you try to protect your team away one way or another to you guys who want to present the thing and need to do that. That's a one thing. And then, so it's really crucial that you take care of your body. I'm not a big drinker because I think alcohol is not good for you during the season. I want to take a beer or two once in a while. Usually that's it. I that's all. I don't drink just because I want to survive this marathon, which I call it a marathon, mental marathon for a coach. So that's why I have to work out. Usually when we practice here during the regular season or even in the playoffs, the boys go to the gym after the practice, and I do too. They kind of motivate me to do the things. So I many days I do it for 20 minutes, squats, things like that. Not long, but little bit. And that's my thing. I don't go to the videos after the practice. Usually me and Juha also, we go to the gym for that 20, 25 minutes, and then we start doing. Or, you know, or then I run or have a hard walk at home at night when I have time. So I try to do things almost every day, not on a game day. Then I'm not type of a guy that much. That maybe in the playoffs I did a couple workouts, but not during the off days. I try to keep. I'm 95 kilos. I'm fat. You know, I'm 5 kilos over of my thing. What I would like to be around 90, but I can't do it. You know, or I could if I really would want to, but I'm okay. I'm okay with it. But right away, when the season was over, I started to come to the gym because that's enjoyment time. It's not just a time for me, which I really appreciate.
Now, obviously, I brought you on the show to talk about the season that just ended. But I want to start by looking back at the end of last season. You were down 3-0 against Linz in the quarterfinals. And I remember vividly going to that fourth game and reading all the newspaper reports. And of course, everybody at Klagenfurt or over at the team still believe in a miracle comeback. How much of that was like the cliche saying of course we're believing in turning that series around, and how much was really believing in a comeback when you're down 3-0 in a best of 7 series?
You know, it's too bad we never experienced it, because it's hard for me to kind of analyze it, that how could have gone, you know, that We faced a hot goalie, couldn't score. Of course, our feeling in the team was that maybe the best, the roles during the season, last season was guys couldn't carry the roles that we designed for them, and there were off-ice issues and stuff like that there. It was a tough season. I changed the captain and this and that, and maybe, you know, many things that I did on the way, or we had. So it's hard for me to say that. You know, sometimes you just need that one click and everything turns around. So it could have been possible. But when you're facing a hot goalie, what they had, and they had a good team, they had a good stimmung in the team, they really played well. You never know. It could have been ended. I don't know. Hard to say. But I believe in process, you know, in a way. So maybe the season, how it went, we played quite good and not that bad. But the real hunt and hunger for success maybe wasn't there last season. And that's the thing that I would like to correct for the upcoming years, you know?
I just wanted to say, you won a championship in 2019. You almost lost in a best of seven series in the quarterfinals, which we don't know, where we don't know what would have happened. But taking that experience into the offseason, where did you think you needed to adjust? Where did you think you needed to, or what were the things you knew you needed to work on?
Yeah, that's a good question and very important one. And I think it was the best thing that happened to us, how the season went in a way and how it was at the end. And, you know, I analyzed myself, what did I do wrong? How come we had so many off-ice issues and on-ice issues in the locker room and stuff like that? What can I do better? How do I need to change? How my staff need to work around the team? And, you know, I talked to Patty, who is in grads now, and Patty is a really smart guy and open kind of a guy. And I realized that I need to get 20% more, or I need to open myself first up and get the communication level better with the team, that they can really, really trust me and really, really not even trust, but understand what I want. That was maybe the biggest thing that, and especially the Austrian guys, after talking to Patty, Patty said to me that sometimes some of the guys that don't understand what you mean, even though it was my second year still, you know. So I realized that how important this one-on-one communication and communication with the captains and communication with the younger guys and the team, and communication from the assistant coach to the team, that communication is the same. Those kind of things came to my mind. It was not something that we played systematically. You know, I changed the game a little bit too. We were faster today. That was another thing, but not the biggest thing. The biggest thing was the mental part. How do I get my boys to really enjoy and understand that we are behind them, and try to get the message there that everybody can be able to get steps ahead this season. And I'm so happy about it, you know, that you asked this question, because that was the key question. That is the key thing what happened this year. I'm proud of myself that I'm 54 and I am be able to grow and mature as an older guy and get new things. And, you know, also not only maybe Patty, but also the David Fisher, the incident that we had during the last year, and it really hurt him. But you know, he came back a stronger guy, and it was not easy for him, not for me, but not for him and not for the team also. But I, at that point, I needed that it has to be done, you know. But I'm so proud of Fishy in a way that he hung around, and our relationship is better than ever, you know, after that, and with everybody. So we all make mistakes or decisions, I would say, maybe not mistakes. I, as a head coach, I need to do decisions every day. And that's the hardest part, maybe, on this job, that you have to make a decision that nobody likes in the benefit of getting the organization better.
Now, we're 20 minutes into this interview. I think I could be going on for hours and hours, but I want to save you some valuable time for your personal duties and to chill and to relax. So I try to keep this within an hour. Maybe I just need to bring you back at one point on a podcast. But so many things, so many interesting things that you mentioned that kind of prepared you for this championship run. The one thing that I'm also interested in would be at what point management and or you decided that you'd try to reduce in an off season of uncertainty the number of imports. I think I read the number that Klagenfurt on average this year played with 4.9 imports per game, which is an incredible low number for the league. At what point did you know we're not going to have as many imports as the Dornbirns, the Grazes, the Linzes, the Bolzanos of this league?
Well, during the summertime last year, the spring and summer, when I talked to Oliver on the phone and about the COVID situation and the league coming up and stuff like that, I know Oliver quite well. I know you know, sometimes he doesn't say straight things, but I know how he is on the phone, and we have a really good relationship, you know, in a way, you know, that. But I sensed that during the summertime, and he kind of said it to me that we might go with three imports, and maybe during the season we see, do we need more? And what happens, and what's the uncertainty is so big that he cannot sign. And I was in Finland, and I thought, holy shit, I'm gonna have to coach, and my staff has to, we need to coach even better and smarter. And but I'm never calling Oliver, I want this and I want this and I want this and this is not good enough. And I'm not making excuses in a way to him also, that I want all the best guys and then we're going to win. I don't believe in that shit, that you bringing the best guys, possible guys who can score and do the things, and then you mix them together, you just automatically win. That's not the story with me. I'm a teacher, mental teacher in a way. I want to teach the boys, bring them joy and bring them understanding that anything is possible when you do things and get individually better. I believe on those things, and not only me, it's the staff. I was really keen on my staff. I got a new guy from Finland. Very smart guy, very sophisticated hockey man, Juha Vuori, and our relationship is just unreal. How we talk, and we can talk openly about everything, and we can fight if we have to. But we didn't have to fight this year at all. You know, we didn't have any things. We kind of have the same mind, and he understands me really well. He can let me coach, and then he supports me from behind, which I really, really respect. So to your answer is that during the summertime, I knew that, okay, it's going to be a different season. I even called the guys. Usually I called the guys during the summertime to coach them, try to prepare them that, hey, you're probably going to have this role and this role, and we're going to go probably with this squad, and let's have the roles little bit ready at the start of the season. Not so much competition like last year, didn't work out with this team. So on and so on, you know. So it happened a year ago. Maybe at this time a year ago, Oliver said that, hey, we don't know what to do. I'm going to go with the local boys. I said, it's perfectly fine.
Now, it's great that you're mentioning your staff. One of the key signings, depending on who you're talking to, was assistant coach Juha Vuori. You already mentioned him. What made you bring him in, and how did the everyday work between you two guys look like? What were his responsibilities? What did you get from him as regards the team effort?
Well, I knew Juha. We studied together. 2004 and in Finland in Vierumäki, and I knew him, and he was in States playing and coaching, and he's really sophisticated, and he was a teacher in Vierumäki last 3 years, and he has been around with Lukko Rauma, Finnish main team, as an assistant for maybe 8 years, and then was as a head coach for 1 year, and he was on I was under 19 Finnish national team coach in Finland back in 2005 or something. He was my assistant then. So I kind of knew him, what he can do, and he had also, it was important that he was the head coach for 1 year. He got fired from that position, and he knew what this business is, and I could totally trust him, and the dialogue with him is so easy. You know, we can talk about everything. That's the thing that I wanted to have. I want that my staff is really loyal. So that was the main thing. The loyalty is number one. And then we go on to the roles, and I wanted to change also something on the game level, and we all need help, you know, how to do it. And he's been in the teaching business, teaching the game to the students of hockey students, you know, the coaching students. So he had very good knowledge of modern hockey. That was the one thing also that I wanted to bring him here, that he's on some issues he teaches me, and I teach him the other issues back to him. So that's the way it should go, that we get better. That's the way we get better. We're not tied up, you know, that I don't want to take, I have my vision, and that's, I go with the rest of my life with my things. I'm open as a human being. I'm ready to learn. And you have brought, of course, some things. And the roles are that I'm the boss and Juha is an assistant boss. And then we try to get things done. You know, Juha is watching more videos than I do on the bus. He's watching the game and taking the clips, and then we watch it together here, and we decide together what to do. And Juha is more presenting them to the team than me. I'm a leader. I present the big picture, and Juha the little details. That's the way it works the better. And he's with the D's during the bench, and I'm with the forwards, and so on and so on. Also, Andy Hocheva, goalie coach, he's a very important part, and also the physical staff, you know, the Bobby Magers firm, Alexa, our physical coach, who was excellent here. He pushed the boys, and so and trainers, you know, everybody, the physio, the Veranchik, Thomas, everybody, like we were like Clue. The staff was like Clue. And there was no bullshitting in a way that nobody, you know, nobody wanted. Many times in the staffs is that people are there for the wrong reasons. They are there for their own glory or their own career. But many times they don't realize that when you are as a Clue and you do the things, and you win, that's the thing when you get to the next level, you know?
Now, interestingly enough, you had Finnish assistant coaches your entire time in Klagenfurt. Is there a deeper reason to that, or is it just a coincidence? Do you care about nationality? Does it help to have a Finnish coach or assistant coach to talk in your native language, or is that just a curiosity?
It's nice to talk Finnish, you know, between me and him, and in a way, and the boys don't hear, they don't understand. No one understands. No, just that. Not really. But we have very good coaches in Finland, and I don't know so many coaches from other countries who could, you know, and I don't want to bring here somebody and start from the zero, level zero. So I kind of wanted to take guys that I know for sure that they can last this. Because many times sometimes you take a guy who has never been in this level or never been the way I coach, because I coach differently than many other coaches. There's much more mental side is involved on my leadership and teaching the guys and maturing the guys. So I'm a different kind of a guy than usually the typical coach. So it's very important for me that I find the right person. It's a person, not really the nationality.
As I was talking about coincidences, is it a coincidence that the past three championships, obviously you won two, but that the past three championships in the league have been won by a Finnish head coach?
No, I think we are hardworking guys, and we grew over there with a lot of snow, and we're not rich country or you know, that we are humble guys, are ready to work, ready to bust our asses, you know, for the team. And like Kaitsu is a really good coach. He did an incredible job in Dornbirn this season. I know him. He's an easygoing kind of a guy, but demanding at the same time. We have a very good coaching system in Finland. That's all.
Now, you head into the season. You know it's going to be a special one because of the pandemic. Then, at one point, you yourself contracted the awful virus that's caused hundreds or thousands of deaths. And at what point? Or how difficult was it for you to get back from that virus, and where did it hit you? This is more than serious.
Yes, it is serious, and too bad. First of all, me and Juha got at the same time, same day, we were positive. And first of all, we had the problem that who's going to coach the team? So this is, in a way, I wanted to, this is a salute to David Fisher in a way that I wanted him. I told Oliver too, that Oliver agreed that I wanted him to coach the team for that time that we were gone. And it was a eye-opening also for David, you know, that holy shit, is it, oh, it's not that easy. And, you know, how can you guys do it? And so on and so on. And I think the respect of the coaching also grew from David's side there, that holy shit. But I wanted to salute him, that I trust him so much that he can coach the team with Andy Hocheva. But yeah, we were out for 10 days and holy shit, I was tired after the corona. I was... you know, on the trips that we took from here, when I started to when I came back, I slept all the way to the Linz. We were first game Linz. I slept all the way to there and all the way back. And even on the bench, I was like, how can I last this? You know, how can I stand here? So it took a lot of out of me for maybe 2 to 3 weeks, and then it started to get better. But it took 3 weeks to get that. The tiredness was the main factor for me, that I was so goddamn tired all the time.
So maybe it's a cautionary tale for all the people that are listening. We're still not over it. There's still an ongoing pandemic. So please be yeah. safe, wear masks and keep your distance. But going back to that time where you unfortunately were out, where you were had contracted the virus as well, the job David Fisher had been doing, and obviously we would have loved to see him on the ice, but after everything that he's done, you think whenever his career is going to end, there might be a coaching career in or with David Fisher?
Yes. He's absolutely, if he wants to. He's a good analyzer. He understands the human nature, you know, the mental, the psychological part, and then he understands the game. And by the way, David Fisher was the coach also in the playoffs. He came every intermission, he came down to tell us what he saw. So he was on the coaching staff in the playoffs. We didn't tell anybody, but he was there.
As regards David Fisher, obviously one question needs to be asked. I know it was a lower body injury. I know he had surgery during the offseason. Kadze counted on him being back. Obviously, he never got back on the ice. Do you still expect him to get back, or is it going to be difficult to return to the ice for him? What's your take?
Well, he's been working now the whole season, like in the gym, and getting the strength in the leg, and there has been setbacks and another setback and this and that, you know, the whole season, but now it has been going better. But it's up to now, we have a contract with him, and now it's up to David to decide in a way during the off season that is he gonna give it a try, or is he gonna I think he's thinking of 50-50 at the moment. That, you know, I think he might be thinking that what about then when I'm 50? Can I walk? Is this worth it? Or do I have the motivation to continue? He knows that it's going to be tough to get that movement back on the ice and to be able to be that kind of a player that we need. So he's going through those things, and I have no answer at the moment for that yet.
That's all good. There's so many. Obviously, that matter will take care of itself, and we got so many other things to talk about. Obviously, you went through a championship winning campaign in 2018-19, and this year. Now, I asked you a question if those two championship winning campaigns could be compared, and you said they can't be compared. But at what point in 18 and 19, did you know that there was something special brewing? And was there a point this year where you felt this squad is really special?
On the first campaign, when I think back in January was the time that I thought that the team was bonding really well together, and they started to play the right kind of a hockey, and we had right amount of difficulties in a way on the way, and the roles were kind of on there for the grabs, for the boys, secured in a way. I thought that, and we had the goalie, Lars was in incredible shape there. I thought that this could be something special in that year. But you know, on the first year, I needed to force. I coached a little bit differently. I needed to force the team to get the belief. I kind of forced the belief to them more than this year. This year, they started to believe themselves more, and this year maybe around during the Christmas time, you know, we got Paul Postman and Frazee and just the right type of a guys, you know, both of them as a personalities. Humble, both humble, ready to work, not superstars. molded in right to the team. And then Paul was so hot at the start. He scored every winning goal for a while, and every goal came, and the belief came and came and built it up and built it up. And then he got hurt, and people thought that now we're goddamn in the shit. But we weren't. We were strong enough to be able to handle that. So it's about the same time both years. You know, you have to have a story to win something. You just can't go to the games and let's go and win. You have to have a kind of a feeling and stimming in the room and stories to talk about, to laugh about, the coaches, how they do or whatever, you know, laugh about themselves, what somebody might have done somewhere. And this Corona thing helped us, because we were only thing that we will be able to do this year, that we were coming here and they had friends. And you know, I talk about this, that I say love, yeah. But I think it's more than friendship. When you achieve something, it's more than friendship, because you have to go beyond that. You have to open up as a guy, to willing to do everything for your body. I mean, I'm ready to die, to take that shot to your head, you know, if necessary. So it's more than a friendship. So that's why I call it a love, even though it sounds like, holy shit, love. What is love? Love is different. Love is not different. Love is that the brother of boys in band, you know, they kick off together and they chill together and they live together. That's the story.
And I'm fairly certain people will understand what kind of love you're trying to describe, because you mentioned Paul Postma, and obviously you didn't have him during your incredible playoff run, but is he one of the main priorities in getting him back? I mean, 22 scoring points or 22 points in 20 games do speak a very loud and clear message and language.
Yes, he's my... First of all, he's my main priority, that he will be, hopefully he will be back. He's going to be the, if he's back, he's going to run the PP, and he's going to bring that how he brings up the puck from the D zone with the legs and using all that, all those tools. There's a spot for him for our roster, where I'm waiting for him to continue here big time.
You don't have David Fisher. You don't have Paul Postma for an extended playoff run. And then you start not creating or coming up, but then it starts being a plug-and-play defense. Steven Strong, he's out for a couple of games. Martin Schomnik, he's not there at the start. The Gregorzes, the Valands, the Stefflers, the Unterwegers of this world play as if they've been there before, even though some of them were in all two playoff experience. How did you do that? How did you come up with that plug and play defensive system?
It's been there all season. We just needed to do it better, you know. And what a guy you just mentioned, in a way that, hey, unbelievable growth from these guys. We motivated them like hell, you know. We just didn't let go, and not just about me, but, you know, also me. I just didn't care. You know, if I don't care who we're missing, nobody talks about it. If I bargain in the papers and, oh, we can't, or to the GM, oh, we can't be successful with this team. So what's going to happen? No one believes. So it starts from me to believe these guys. It starts from the team to talk about the right things, you know, to the guys. I had many, many days last season. I had four of my captains here. I listened to them. I wasn't the guy who was just pushing information to them. It was the other way around. We were asking questions with Juha. What do we do? What do you guys think? What about this? Talk to him a little bit. That guy's a little bit nervous there. Talk to him. So it was not me only talking and Juha. It was these guys, these four guys also, and all the other older guys, Schumnik and these guys, you know. So it was kind of a together work to get the people to the right mindset and start believing. And then the system was our system was so goddamn tight and simple that we just needed to execute that. They shift in and shift out. And then, of course, the goalie. Winning team needs a winning goalie. And what a guy. If Lars Haugen was good, so is Dom. What a winner. What a winner. He wants it every day. You know, he practices every day 100%. He doesn't take any days off, as goalies may sometimes do that. They don't, you know, they let the shots go. No, he was competing for every shot, every season, till the end. That's why he's a winner.
And finally became one because it was his very first championship. But sticking with the defense for one last question, and it came up during the playoffs, and it was in a newspaper where Thomas Wallent was quoted, "I'm happy that Innsbruck didn't offer me an extension." These are tough words. So he was basically not left for dead, but he was put on the street, and not a lot of people thought, well, he might go on and be on a championship team. What did you see in Thomas Wallent, and how did he work his way up from, because he was originally intended to be on Kazi's second team for the Alps Hockey League, and now he was a key cog, a cornerstone of the championship winning team. How did this happen?
Well, he joined the AHL team first, right? And then during the August sometime, we were missing, Fishy was out and we were missing guys, and I took him to the practice. And after one practice, I said to my colleague here that, holy shit, who is this guy? Because I didn't even know that they got him, you know? And I said, I like this guy. His gaps, how he moves, how he practices, how his attitude is, I really like it. And I told him that you come back tomorrow, and then you come back tomorrow. So he kept on coming back. And eventually he got a chance, and the rest is history. But, you know, the guy, it's good example that maybe I heard that he was kind of a little nose up high, maybe 3-4 years ago, he was a big prospect here, and then nothing happened because he maybe wasn't willing to work at the time or didn't understand what it's all about. He went away, we took him back, and suddenly now everything clicks. And he grew on the way. He matured as a player on outside. And he knew that how good this could be here. How good we have things in cards, say, in a way. We get money on time. We get things on time. We're, you know, everything is on going like this. So, but what a warrior. See, unbelievable warrior. And can play with the puck and can especially... I want defensemen who can defend. That's their first job. You know, many times people talk about very offensive kind of a defenseman. Hey, he's nice. But when you put him on the championship team, he has to be able to defend for us, for my team. And that's what Wallent is all about, is defense first, and then comes the rest.
Now, it's been an interesting season for Klagenfurt in general. If we look at the fall, you had the very first KAC-produced, quote-unquote, player being drafted by an NHL team with Timo Nikko. You showed that you develop talent. You get it, or you might be getting a player like Thomas Wallent for the Alps Hockey League team, but if he's good and if he proves himself, he might go on to the A team, the quote-unquote Kampfmannschaft. How important was that year in terms of showing everyone that Klagenfurt is a place that develops talent?
Really important. And actually, I've been talking about this right from the day one I came here. Maybe the first year I didn't use that many guys in there because they weren't ready. Last year we did already, you know, Kernberger played a lot and this guy came up, you know, Marcel Vitti was, I took him from the AHL in the first year, you know, but he was designed to be there and the same thing happened. I'm a developer at the same time I want to win. It's a tough, you know, tough thing to put it together, but and if you're willing to work, it's very simple. I'm really simple what I'm asking from the guys. I'm not asking goals or assists or nice things. I'm asking throw your heart to the work. And if you do, you get the good things from me and us, you know. And that I want to develop even more that everybody understands in this organization, those younger guys in AHA Island, under 18 also, that they have a path to the first team if they do things right. Every day, not once in a while, every goddamn day.
Now, Markus Peintner, who's doing a lot of work in the juniors, he was on a podcast a couple of weeks ago and told a lot about the development or developmental work that's going on in the juniors. Christoph Brandner was on this podcast. So a lot of good things are happening as regards the junior program that Klagenfurt has implemented. How does your work or your exchange with the Peintners and the Brandners of this world look like? How often do you talk? How often do you talk about players that might be an issue or that might come up to your team at some point?
Not so much with me. It's Juha's duty. Juha is kind of a guy who has designed this big picture to the Peintner and Brandner. So Juha's other job here is to get that junior system right way. So many times I go through Juha. I've talked to them, yeah, quite a bit sometimes, but not so much. I'm focusing on this big team. And then the Juha is a little bit focusing on the juniors when he has time and brings the speciality from him to there. And then he helps me here. And then, so it's more of a Juha, but I talk to Roger quite a bit. And then the Kirk, who is the head coach for those two under 18. And then the Alps. So I talk to them more. And we have had really good communication with Kirk and Roger. Could be even better for upcoming years.
Obviously, to just drop their names, Roger Ullmann and Kirk Fury. Now, the one thing, and you're at the top of the pyramid that struck me the other day. I was talking to Phil Lucas, who's an expert on Pulse 24 and himself a coach, and he said what a lot of teams are missing is an identity. Klagenfurt, from top to bottom, has got a clear-cut identity. Now you being the head coach of the most important team in a city, what and if someone's never, for whatever reason, heard of Klagenfurt, what's that identity? How would you describe the identity of Klagenfurt in terms of playing hockey?
We are a team who never gives up. We are a team who supports one another. We are a team who defends well, attacks better and better. I would say better and better. That's my big thing, that get it better and better. We support one another here. And those are these words are not just because many people just say these and they don't exist. I want them that they exist on the practice day. I want them that they exist when we meet at the outside of the rink somewhere. You know, I want that we live and breathe the same identity, kind of a caring identity. So as a coach, I know how to do this, or I know because it's who I am in a way. And I want to teach them to be not the same, but to understand the identity word, because it's hard to explain what it is, but it's a Mannschaft who's taking care of one another. That's what it is. And it has to be from the juniors to the main team. And if it's the same for many, many years, suddenly the people who are coming to the main team, I don't have to teach everything. You know, that's the key thing for the future, that same intensity should be going in the juniors. And when it comes to, when they come to my team or our team over here, they know what they are expected from.
Now, obviously, as we're approaching the hour that we're talking about hockey, I wanted to keep this a little more general, but of course, we need to talk about the playoffs, the run, and we need to talk about the finals. If we just look at the past couple of weeks, the past five games against Bolzano, what do you think ultimately made the difference for Klagenfurt?
First of all, I remember during the regular season when we played against Bolzano. We beat them at home 1-0 in the overtime, and their coach yelled to our bench or to our guys that you will never make it past first round. And I didn't know that, because I would have gone mad, crazy maybe, because you don't yell to the coach, doesn't yell to another team's players. They don't do that. That's forbidden, because you have enough to do with your own bench. And so actually he motivated us a lot, you know, our team. And we were ready for this. We were ready for the first two games. That was the big thing. We were ready to compete right away. We knew that it's going to be a really tough team and hard team and physical team and individual talent like hell, and a very good goalie. So it wasn't going to be easy. That first two games were the key things. And then how we played the third game, I liked the way we played the third game, even though we lost, you know. So it gave us confidence facing the fourth one, which was really tough at home. We got it in the overtime. But the first two, we were just ready and committed. You know, maybe that's the word, ready and committed to face any adversity, anything, whatever might happen. We were ready for everything in our minds, and not only me, the guys, you know.
How did you do it to make your players like not lose their cool, keep their calm? Because one of the more drastic differences in the series from our outside perspective seemed that the Bolzano more often than not lost its cool, whereas KC kept his. How did you do that?
It's about the process, how we coach, how we do here, how we are every day during the season, and how, of course, also I am at the bench. I'm not a screamer, or I'm not going after the refs after every play. And of course, we had something that we were going crazy there once in a while, but then I told the guys that, hey, shut up. We don't do that shit. We're not, it's not our way to do. We just play. And it worked out really well, you know. It's tough to be cool when and you think shit is happening on the ice and you get bad calls or whatever happens there. It's tough to not to say nothing, but I think it was an advantage that we gained during the playoffs against them. That was one key thing.
Now, again, from the outside looking in and having conducted a couple of interviews with you and having listened to a whole lot of them, it seems as if you're a master motivator who more often than not tries, but succeeds in finding the right words. Where do you take your motivational tricks, and how many of them are left in your repertoire?
Oh, that's the I need to be growing all the time. I'm a creative guy. I might take a thing from somebody's one word and I create something. So I don't really take it, you know, I take it from ordinary life, whatever happens, you know, I'm I'm on the process, especially during the playoffs. You know, I'm awake all the time. So day and night, in a way, like mentally awake. So I live so deeply into that process that I don't recognize anything else in life during the playoffs. So also I try to be as open as I can. You know, I sometimes have talked to the really good actress who and they, it's a kind of a little bit kind of a same thing that they go on the stage, how they prepare themselves. It's and they have to throw themselves. They're open to the people who come to watch them. And it's the same thing with the coach, in a way, who is going, the team is waiting for you to say the right words. It's not always that I do that the right words are coming, but you know, they see that I put everything on the table, in a way. I'm not afraid of anything in front of my team. So I can, you know, if I can make mistakes and will make mistakes, the guys can make mistakes on the ice, right? And that's, you know, so, and they, you know, I just raise my hand and boys, I fucked it up, you know, and I'm not going to do it again. So it's the same thing. They when they do thing on the ice, they can say that, sorry, boys, it was on me. So it starts that culture starts to touch one another, and then you open up in a way. So, but for the future, I have to grow, and I'm trying to grow every year, you know, I'm trying to read or get to the next level, and because that's the key. If you are enthusiastic about this thing, like I am, I'm only 54, you know, there's many things to grow. I'm just thinking that I'm maturing as a human being lately. In 2 or 3 years, I've been maturing as a guy, as a coach. So I don't take everything so personally, or I don't want to correct everything, because that wears down the team in a way. But the big picture has to be, the train has to be going to the right way. Anything else is not acceptable.
Now, playoffs are hard on players, on coaches, and of course on their families. There was a great piece about your two sons who also happened to be coaches. When was the last time that the entire Matikainen family sat at one table?
Last summer, in my summer house. I have a tiny summer house in eastern Finland, and we gather there. And that was the last summer. But yeah, I have two great sons and one great daughter, and grandsons and granddaughters, and so I'm very lucky, and they are coaching. And they are learning. My boys are coaching and learning. And one is in Italy, or actually both were in Italy, and other in Alt Hockey League, another in Allegre in Serie B. And he was a head coach. Another one was a goalie coach and assistant coach. And they're, and you know, it's been for them, it's they have seen it so long. They saw me playing first, then they've seen me coaching, and we talk about these things. I try to avoid to talk about hockey in my summer times, and I usually tell them, when you come here with me, we don't talk about hockey, okay, boys? We talk about something else, fishing or whatever, but not hockey, because I can't hear it all the time.
But how tough is it, and everybody has to bring, like, or has to do, or everybody sacrifices a lot during the playoffs, but how tough is it to not have family around all the time for you personally?
It's tough, and I have to my wife, you know, she's been with me married 30 years, over 30 years, and sometimes I don't know how we how she can last it. But I still love her, and hopefully she loves me. But it's tough. But during the playoffs, you know, during the playoffs, I don't have time for anybody in a way. I'm so deep into the team that the team is everything. During the season and off season, it's very important. My family is all I have. That's the most important thing.
I'm gonna let you get a step closer to that off season in just a bit. Only a couple more questions for you. Obviously, after winning a championship, people's phones blow up because of all the texts and all the calls one is getting. What was the call or what was the text that surprised you the most or made you the happiest in terms of getting congratulated on the championship?
WhatsApp message from my, you know, we have a family WhatsApp from the boys, both of the boys and my daughter and then my wife. They were so happy, and that was the best thing for me. Right after the winning, when I looked at our phone, I texted back. You know, that was the thing.
Now, as we're gonna see you back in the league, and I know it makes a lot of Klagenfurt fans very happy. I can tell you, it makes us media members very happy to have you back, because it's a pleasure to be working with you. What's your key advice for people during the off season? You said you don't talk a lot about hockey. What's a good way to spend the off season to get away from the game of hockey, as beautiful as it is? But what should people do during these next couple of months?
Hey, you guys are living in such a great country. It's unreal. It's so beautiful. You got mountains, you got water, you got everything here. You can golf, you can do whatever you like. You know, you can bike. It's a paradise, this city and this whole country, what I think. Even, you know, Vienna and all the whatever, you go to Innsbruck, whatever. It's you guys are so fortunate in a way, in my mind, when I look at your country, that you can do whatever. You can go mountain hiking, you can go to the beach. Wörthersee is so clear, you can drink it. You don't even have to drink at home. You know, let's forget hockey for a little while, except our GM. He has to work his ass off. But we can rest for a little while now. And by the way, at this time, I want to thank you guys and Pulse people. You know, very professional. I like the way you guys are interviewing, and you too. It's you kind of you're a little bit tricky. You know, sometimes I feel that you're tricky and psychological, which is quite tough for me sometimes to go to interview with you, because you see more than some other journalists or guys do. But I thank you all.
One of the bigger compliments I ever got. No better way, obviously, to close out this talk. Obviously, I could have gone on for many, many more hours, but I just need to bring you back at some point on a podcast. Coach, enjoy the off season. Congratulations again on winning the championship. Always a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
Hockey O'Clock mit Martin Pfanner wird unterstützt von Casumo.com. Casumo, das ist Wetten leicht gemacht. Casumo ist der einfache und faire Sportwettenanbieter in Österreich. Nationale oder internationale Fußballspiele oder viele andere Sportarten. Mit Casumo.com liegst du in jedem Fall richtig. Mit dem Link in den Shownotes dieses Podcasts holst du dir eine 10€ Freiwette. Einfach Link klicken und gleich loslegen. Casumo.com, das ist Casumo.com. Casumo, Wetten leicht gemacht.
Very happy to be joined by this man in the quote-unquote exit interviews. He's been headed to the off-season for quite some time with his club. I guess there's never really an off-season, but first of all, very glad that Victor Selig, General Manager of Hydrofeva AV19, is joining me. Victor, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you very much to giving me a chance to talk with you. You know, like, as I said, you know, like in a big round, you know, like I really love your t-shirt. So that's still a case. So, you know, like I'm really looking forward, you know, like to talk to you.
I have to say, I kind of thought, okay, this has to be the GM with the best taste in music. Obviously, that's very subjective, but what's your history with, not necessarily Motorhead, but what's your history with music and heavy music in particular?
You know, like I pretty much grew up, you know, like to listening, you know, like music, whatever music, you know, like I like different type of, but for sure, you know, like where's the electronic guitar, you know, like this is really close to my heart. So I love music. I saw Motorhead live too in Hungary. Wasn't my favorite band, but like I really respected them, you know, like as their career and you know, like what they did, you know, like and it just have to be loud and heavy, and I love it.
Now I've been to concerts in Hungary. Funnily enough, Motorhead concerts in Hungary as well, and I've seen some of the wildest music fans ever. Now I've heard stories of Feva, and I'm ashamed to admit I've never seen a game in person in Czechish Feva, but people have told me you've got some of the rowdiest and coolest hockey fans in the league. How do Hungarian music fans and Hungarian hockey fans go together?
You know, like I have a couple of friends, you know, like who's musicians, you know, like who's like in the underground music scenes, you know, like, and they all love hockey. So, you know, like, and we used to talk, you know, like a lot, like I said to them, listen, you know, like I would change with you, you know, like in a second, you know, like I would like to live your life. And they said the same thing to me too. So, you know, like when I was an active player, so we just figured it out, you know, like then those kind of music people, what they're doing, they're really close to us, you know, like what the athletes are doing. So, you know, like they just said, the problem is, you know, like we don't have the result in the end, you know, like, and we have. So they were a little bit jealous, but a lot of musicians, you know, like coming to watch us. And I can underline that too, you know, like our fans are fantastic in here in Fehérvár. It was so bad that they had no chance to see the team live. But I'm, you know, like there's a lot of good fans all around the league. So, you know, like I'm really happy and I'm really looking forward for next season. And hopefully, you know, like those loud and special, crazy fans can come back to the rings.
Now, you've had a long and successful career as a player. You are enjoying a lot of success as a GM. But if you look at hockey and music in kind of or as kind of separate businesses, but still knowing both of them, what do you think is the one main quality that you need in hockey and in music to succeed?
You know, like this is both an entertainment business. So, you know, like I think, you know, like Hungary is a special place, you know, like in sports too. You know, like it's a little bit different, the whole financial background than for example in Austria. So, you know, like it's a lot of governmental, you know, like you know, like sources, you know, like which is coming in. So I really hope that, you know, like there's a lot of good things, you know, like in Austria, you know, like how those teams are functioning, you know, like which would be good to have in here in Hungary as well. But, you know, like maybe, you know, like just to have live concerts you know, like in the intermissions, you know, like that's the place where we can put the two things together. And hopefully, you know, like both the sport and the music can be, you know, like more successful or known or better or whatever. You know, like we tried this, you know, like when I played for the Hungarian national team, you know, like some sessions were really good, you know, like in the big arena in Budapest. So the federation organized some kind of concerts, you know, like during the intermission. So I really love that. You know, like that's a good idea.
Now, I mentioned it in the intro. Is there ever a pause for a general manager? Is there ever a day where you don't think about your work, where you don't think about your club? Or is every day about Hydrofeva AV19?
That's a great question. You know, like... If I have to, you know, like just think about it, no, you know, like that's our job, you know, like we have to be available all the time. And I don't think, you know, like I since this was my fifth season in here, and it wasn't I think a minute when it was off, you know, like sometimes, you know, like I can forget this, you know, like, but you know, like it's just coming really rarely. So this is a nonstop thing.
So the season has ended. The season ended, unfortunately, for Fehervar fans in the quarterfinals. Still, huge success in making the playoffs. What have the days after your season has ended looked like so far? Every day at the office? Is it a 4-day week? Is it a 3-day week? How does it look like?
You know, like this is every day in the office. You know, like, that's what I like. You know, like because I like the things. You know, like which is regular. You know, like I'm just waking up. I'm not living in Budapest in Fehérvár. I'm living in Budapest. So you know, like it's just jumping in a car, drive to here, being here pretty much in a whole day, doing all the stuff. But you know, like that's the way it is. You know, like when the hockey players are going to holiday, then we just start to, you know, like pick up the phones and laptops and everything. So the main part of the work for us, you know, like it's right now. So, and during the season, you know, like when we just, you know, like try to see the team to doing good. So there's, you know, like less things to fix during the season than right now. So, but, you know, like right now we are working up to the start of the season and then the season starts. So we just, you know, like following the team. So that's why it's a little bit like a nonstop thing. But for me, you know, like it's 5 days, you know, like sometimes in the weekends too.
Now, before we get to the new season and obviously everything that you've done ever since, have you followed the playoffs at the Bet at Home Ice Hockey League, or were you just too focused on the current work? Have you been able to follow them?
Of course, you know, like I'm really interested. You know, like all the things are just developing. You know, like congrats. You know, like in this forum too to Klagen for, you know, like it was just a outstanding performance from them. But you know, like we just have, you know, like a group chat, you know, like with all the managers. And I think, you know, like this congratulation is for everybody, you know, like we involved for this season, because that wasn't easy for anybody. But back to your question, yeah, you know, like I try to follow as much games as possible, because wherever hockey, you know, like I like to follow, you know, like I really love hockey. And especially, you know, like if something which is in our business, you know, like in our league, you know, like it's extra interesting. You know, like I had like a couple of years ago, I had a privilege to work with the Sport TV, you know, like to be a co-commentator in the NHL game. So, you know, like I really like this, you know, like it's just, I can talk about hockey nonstop. So that's the way it is. Sometimes I think it can be pain in the ass for somebody who I with a lot.
Tell you what, depending on how good your German is, and we might even do it in English, you could jump onto the NHL match day on Pulse 24. We got the NHL rights as well. And if there's a void to fill, you'll be one of the first the first people to call.
You know, like if we can switch to English, you know, like that's not a problem. But my German is just a bit better than my Chinese. So, you know, like it would be easier for me in English.
Okay, as my Hungarian is basically non-existent, we do that in English. So that's obviously the lowest common denominator that we're having. If you said, or you said that you were obviously following the playoffs. Now, the round four teams and Fehervar unfortunately has never been to round two and the last four teams. If you looked at the Viennas, the Salzburgs, the Klagenfurts, and the Bolzanos of this world, is there a lowest common denominator, or is there a thing where you say, this is still missing, we need to have that to get over the hump and finally win a playoff series?
You know, like it's going to be all the time something, because, you know, like those teams are there for a long time, you know, like they know what it takes, you know, like they going through every, pretty much every season, you know, like on that, you know, like path. And as I said in the beginning, you know, like there's a lot of things, you know, like how they functioning, you know, like it can help them to be stable, to just build something. So there's all the time something, you know, like which we can find, and hey, we have to be better in here and there. There's a lot of things, you know, like it's really tough to really just point out, you know, like one or two things. So what we would like to do, you know, like it's just happened, you know, like from last season to this season, that we would like to do some kind of, like, this is a sport stuff, you know, like a stability around the team. So not changing too much players, you know, like if we have a valuable, you know, like parts or important parts in the team, we try to keep them. So that's how we try to operate. You know, like I think, you know, like Klagenfurt's biggest, you know, like strength this season was the core of the team. You know, like they have a really strong group of guys, you know, like playing there together for a long time, really can stick together. You know, like even if they haven't had that much of a, you know, like import help, you know, like, I mean, like number wise, but still, you know, like the team was strong enough, you know, like to go all the way. So, you know, like there's a lot of things, you know, like just giving you a short, you know, like answer to your question.
Good thing is on this podcast, we do have a lot of time and we do have, or I do have a couple of questions to really try to dig a little deeper. Obviously, after Fejvar lost in a clean sweep to Vienna in the quarterfinals, everybody thought, okay, great season for Fejvar. Then news got out that Antti Kahula would be back. And then a couple of days after that, news got out that Antti Kahula wouldn't be back. Now, obviously, with a lot of playoff hockey to be played, maybe some fans in Austria didn't pay too much attention to what was happening in Fejvar. But could you lead me through those couple of days and weeks where you first extended Antti Kahula and then didn't bring him back for the season 21-22?
You know, like the place when I can see right now then maybe we can do better is the timing of the communication, because we haven't, you know, like we signed him, you know, like way earlier back for next season. So, you know, like, but it was all the time something, you know, like we tried to just let everybody focus on the middle round and then the playoffs and stuff like that. So that's why the communication is just came out way later than we just extend him. You know, like things happen, you know, like which wasn't really, you know, like I think the best for the team. And then, you know, like the final thing is we had after the season, we had the Hungarian Cup as well, which is, you know, like when the Hungarian teams are competing against each other, it was just a four teams tournament, you know, like, and we lost in the final, which is bad because we badly would like to win that. But on the second thing, you know, like things happened there, which wasn't good at all. So, you know, like that was just a final thing when we thought that we have to pull the trigger. So for sure, you know, like from outside, it looked a little bit weird because it's like a 2-week spam or something was, but you know, like the extension was somewhere in the end of January. So, you know, like it was a couple of months of experience and not 2 weeks. And we just changed our mind.
Now, obviously, you're looking for a new head coach because of the pandemic and still a lot of leagues not playing, still a lot of coaches being on the market. What would your ideal profile of a new head coach look like? What are you looking for?
You know, like it doesn't matter, you know, like the passport and the nationality, you know, like it's just what's the most important thing for me is just the hockey philosophy, you know, like what kind of hockey he would like to see and what kind of person he's going to be. So, you know, like for sure, you know, like there was a bunch of things which was missing from our game, you know, like last season. And that was pretty much the reason why we couldn't perform, you know, like we were really far, you know, like how we've been in the beginning of the season, like just be closer to the end. So especially in the playoffs and the pick round. So, you know, like that two things, you know, like what I can really point it out is just the hockey philosophy, you know, like the how structure is that the guy is and the most important thing is the character. So, you know, like we are looking for a great person.
Obviously, the person first. Your former head coach Antti Kahula was on this podcast a couple of weeks, I think 1.5 months ago, and he talked about his philosophy and him trying to win a championship by playing offensive hockey. Obviously, he didn't get past round one in the playoffs. Would that indicate, would that suggest that you're looking for someone who's also got some kind of defensive stability in his mind?
For sure. You know, like that was the point. You know, like we scored the most goals in the regular season, you know, like, but I think we get almost the most again goals against too. So, you know, like it has to be some kind of, you know, like a more structured kind of hockey, you know, like for next season. But for sure, you know, like we would like to see, you know, like most of the guys back, you know, like because we have a lot of, I think, values, as I said before, and those guys are capable to play an effective offensive hockey. So, you know, like we have to keep, you know, like as much as we can, you know, like what was the our favor or advantage, you know, like last season, but at the same time try to fix some spots, you know, like where we were not that strong. So, you know, like that would be, you know, like again, in the ideally word, you know, like if we can just fix a little bit on our defense, I mean, the offense is going to contribute, you know, like that good, you know, like, but the hockey is not that simple. So, you know, like we have to find a healthy balance, you know, like between these two parts of the game and try to, you know, like win more games, you know, like than we're losing. So, you know, like it's going to be a heck of a challenge for sure, because, you know, like Antikarhua did a couple of really good things in here for sure. You know, like offensive hockey is entertainment, you know, like it's good to watch, especially if it's working. But, you know, like if we just give up, you know, like easy goals because we are not tight enough, you know, like in the back end, then sooner or later, that's not going to last long.
Now, if we look at your roster for the next year, unlike many other ice hockey league teams, you're set up pretty well. You've got a good core group and you keep adding talent to it. Just the other day, you signed István Derboc, and I hope I kind of pronounced his name correctly. What kind of players are you trying to add, and how long will you be adding players before there's a head coach?
You know, like as I said, you know, like we try to, you know, like keep the team, the much players as possible, you know, like in here, because I think, you know, like we had a really good group. So, you know, like we don't want to just make changes to do changes, you know, like we try to just upgrade the team, you know, like and it's going to be maybe just a couple of changes, you know, like Terbuch, it was just perfect, you know, like I cannot, you know, like tell this name, you know, like more clearly Hungarian than you did. So it was just perfect. You know, like Hungarian players, you know, like can be important, you know, like we would like to just see a couple of, you know, like national team players who get a little bit of the experience and international experience as well, and who can just add a little bit of the strength to our domestic core. So, you know, like, I think, you know, like from now on, maybe we're not going to move that fast because, you know, like I would like to just cooperate a little bit with the new or our future head coach too, you know, like how he's going to see this team and which spot we need to maybe, you know, like add an extra player or change somebody. So, you know, like, we're going to leave a couple of spots open for sure, you know, like, and just cooperate with the new coaching staff and seeing, you know, like what their opinions are, you know, like on that.
Now, it's interesting that you mentioned the Hungarian national team because there is an interesting person leading the Hungarian national team, and Hüdugo Fejva AV19 has always been the most important club in providing players to the Hungarian national team. How have you and Sean Simpson communicated so far? Has there been contact between you two guys?
Sure, you know, like he just came really often to, you know, like it was a closed door games, but obviously, you know, like we let him come in, you know, like to check the players. So we met a couple of times during the season, and especially, you know, like it was a session for the national team after the season, and we had a chance to talk, and he just called me after the tournament too, you know, like I would like to exchange, you know, like a couple of thoughts with him, you know, like about the players, how he saw them. And I think it's going to be a continuous thing. So I really appreciate this because he can help me or us a lot too, you know, like how he sees our players, you know, like in a little bit different, you know, like area or just playing a little bit different role, how they acting, reacting, behaving, you know, like this is really important information for us too. And I think, you know, like together we can give the chance to these guys, and especially for the young guys, you know, like to be better.
If we look at Fehervar's track record, you've been to the playoffs, you didn't get to the playoffs. You've been to the playoffs, you didn't get to the playoffs. So it's been one or the other for the past couple of years. How do you make sure that Fehervar, and I know it's going to be more difficult with more teams joining the league, but still, how are you trying to use the offseason to make sure that fans in Székes Fehervar get a playoff team every year, if possible?
You know, like this is our next step. You know, like that's where or what we have to working on. You know, like it's just to have a stable regular season team, and one way to this, I guess. You know, like it's just to not changing the teams big time. You know, like year by year, just try to keep the core together. You know, like the values together. When everybody knows what to expect, try to just upgrade it and just again be a solid, you know, like regular season team. And if we can do that, you know, like then we have a good chance to be in the playoffs more often than before. And then, you know, like the playoffs is a different story, you know, like a new championship. So, you know, like we have to, you know, like every participation in the playoffs is just a learning process for us, you know, like the players can have a taste, you know, like how it feels. For sure, most of the guys are already been in the playoffs, you know, like with different teams. But you know, like with this organization, with this group, you know, like it's still, you know, like a learning process. But I really think, you know, like, and again, you know, like that's our goal, to have a team who's going to be in the playoffs, you know, like more often.
Now, the next season is going to be interesting because of many, many reasons, but one main aspect why next year is going to be great is because three new teams, obviously two old ones or old acquaintances, are joining. There are two new countries in the league, and there might be one big new rivalry in Italy. How was your stance as someone who's leading an international club of the Benetton Ice Hockey League on those members or at getting bigger? Did you vote in, or how in favor were you of expansion in the league?
You know, like the new name, you know, like it's International Central European Hockey League. And I think, you know, like right now it's just became that, you know, like it's the two new countries, you know, like added to the mix. I think it's going to be a really interesting competition. So, you know, like I just, you know, like there was a Hungarian team, you know, like two Hungarian teams, actually other Hungarian teams who competed in the Slovakian extra league, you know, like, and I was just asking that the national team head coach back in the years, you know, like, hey, you're watching, you know, like regularly both leagues, you know, like what's your opinion on this? You know, like which leagues, you know, like what where's the difference and he said, you know, like, listen, you know, like to watching your league is way more interesting, way more attractive, because, you know, like every game, you know, like some different type of hockey teams with different type of style of hockey are coming, you know, like it's you know, like in the Slovakian extra league, it's a really good level, you know, like, but you know, like Slovakian coaches, you know, like it's just train, you know, like Slovakian players, you know, like it's pretty much the same style of hockey every night, but somebody's doing a little bit better and faster. But in here in this league, you know, like you never know what's coming, you know, like you have to be prepared, you know, like it's a different hockey here, different hockey from another team, you know, like it's really interesting. So, you know, like I'm up for this, you know, like, and two teams, you know, like Znojmo, you know, like they coming back, you know, like the Hungarian or the Fehervar fans got a really good relationship with the Znojmo fans. They used to travel there, you know, like if it's allowed to travel, you know, like, you know, like, I don't know, like 200 fans, 200-300 sometimes, you know, like, especially if it's a Christmas, you know, like break somewhere. So, and Ljubljana, you know, like Slovenia is close to us, you know, like we know them, you know, like not actually the new organization, but Hungarian hockey and Slovenian hockey are you know, like going pretty much hand by hand for a long time. And Brunico, you know, like is just one little personal story. You know, like their head coach was my coach for 9 years, you know, like when I was a player. So there's a personal contact there. So, you know, like I'm happy for the new teams. And I really hope that they can find, you know, like what they're, you know, like expect to have, you know, like to joining. And I really hope that, you know, like this three to new teams is just helping, you know, like this league to be better.
Now, Fehava joined the league in 2007. You joined the club in 2016. Fehava is the longest tenured international member of the now Ice Hockey League. Is there any kind of advice that you, from your past experiences as a club and as a GM, could give, for example, Hatzi Pustertal, who's new to this league, who's got his work cut out for him as a team? Is there anything you could tell him that might help him?
You know, like in the beginning, just shut up. You know, like no, you know, like I'm just joking. You know, like it's you know, like for us, you know, like it was an honor all the time. You know, like to be a part of this. So you know, like it's a huge challenge because we knew, you know, like right from the start. Okay, this is just my fifth season in here. So you know, like the leadership, you know, like back in the years too. You know, like they just thought that this going to be, you know, like a thing where the team can make the next step. You know, like this is a great promotion for Hungarian hockey, I guess. And you know, like I think that's an honor for us still, you know, like to be a part of this group and to compete in this level and this championship. So you know, like I don't really can give them, you know, like an advice, but you know, like I'm pretty sure that they're going to happy. You know, they are just a little bit in the same shoes than we've been. You know, like it's just going to a higher, you know, like level or higher competition level. So for sure, you know, like they're going to be, you know, like really pleased and try to do their best. So, but the good thing is we're still in this, you know, like in these shoes. You know, like after 10-ish years, you know, so we would like to just see, you know, like how we can compete against the best teams over there and where we can, how we can find just a little thing, you know, like where we can be the best, you know, like in this league.
Got a couple more questions until we round out this conversation. Hopefully you then enjoying your well-deserved weekend. You as an international team, I mean, if we look at Pustertal, who's now gotten a new rival in Bolzano. Austrian teams having their local rivals. Snorma probably having their rivals in Vienna, which are very close. How long do you think it'll take until Fehervar gets a Hungarian rival in this league?
You know, like there wasn't a secret, you know, like it was an interest from Hungarian clubs, you know, like to join to this league. I don't know, you know, like if there's a case anymore, because as I said, you know, like two teams has just went towards the Slovakian way before. And right now, you know, like one team has just came back to the Hungarian league and another team is still, you know, like pending, you know, like their situation, if they are, you know, like still competing there or coming back to Hungary. So, but I think, you know, like if we are not going to have the Hungarian rival, you know, like in a league, but still I'm really, like, you know, like this idea to have this Christmas rounds, you know, like when local, not local teams, but you know, like teams who's not that far away competing, you know, like over there and seeing them back and forth. So I think that's a good way to create new rivalries and maybe that's not going to be that strong than, for example, or traditional, you know, like let's say like this way, like Klagenfurt and Villach, for example. But, you know, like still, you know, like, as I said, Snoimo, you know, like maybe it's not going to be a rivalry, but it's going to be, you know, like a team, you know, like where the fans would like to go, the you know, like the visiting team's fans would like to go and see and have contacts and relationships. So, you know, like with this kind of idea, I hope we can keep this, you know, like for next season as well. That can create some kind of rivalries, you know, like for the future, for sure.
Pustertal is joining the Benetton Ice Hockey League with a new state-of-the-art arena. There's been models. There's been plans handed around that Fehava is going to get a new state-of-the-art arena as well. What's the current status quo on your new arena? And I know these are difficult times, so everybody needs to understand.
For sure, but you know, like just if I would like to go to a little bit a way to joking, you know, like a difficult time is lost for 10 years in here, you know, like about the rink. So, you know, like it's not a new subject in here in Fehérvár because it's been a while. And, you know, like they would like to, you know, like just have or build, you know, like a new rink. I think that the fans, you know, like at least deserve it, you know, like to have a more like updated, you know, like 21st century, you know, like venue. Right now, you know, like there's a plan is already made, you know, like the land is already bought by the city. Right now, you know, like it's a tender, you know, like which is ongoing. So I really hope that this tender is going to be successful. And, you know, like the just the budget for that is going to be a doable stuff because this is right now a governmental project. So, you know, like we would like to have that, but we don't really have any, you know, like control on this situation or over this situation. But right now, as far as I know, you know, like there's in the plan from the government that they would like to build this. And just my personal opinion, I think we have the best chance ever, you know, like right now to make this one happen, you know, like in the short future.
Doesn't matter when it's happening, as long as it's happening, but even if fans plan to make a trip and there's a new arena or the current one, me personally, everybody who's been to a game of Hydro Fehérvár AV19 said you need to go there. I stated it at the beginning. I never had the chance to go yet. I'll try to change that. But if you had to tell fans from European countries why Fehérvár or hockey in Fehérvár is so good, what would you tell fans to make him go there? What's hockey in Fehérvár all about?
You know, like it's passion. You know, like it's religion in here. You know, like we have a really strong group of fans. You know, like who's sticking with the team, whatever happens. So you know, like for sure, you know, like if the team is doing better, you know, like we have more fans in here. But the group, the core, is coming all the time. And they're really passionate. They are an expert right now too. So, you know, like there's a lot of critiques, you know, like if the things are not working well, but this is normal. And I think, you know, like the reason why it makes, you know, like deserve a chance, you know, like Fehérvár to come is that the atmosphere of the rink, you know, like, as I said, it's not a brand new arena. It's like, let's go like this. It's an old barn, but you know, like the fans are really close to the ice, you know, like they can feel, you know, like the pucks, and sometimes they can eat the pucks too if they're not, you know, like taking care. But, you know, like hopefully not. But, you know, like fans are really close. Fans are really, you know, like tight on the stands, and they are really loud. You know, like it just happened 2 years ago when we were in a huge run to make the top six, and finally we made it. But the last couple of games, you know, like it was just so packed and so loud. You know, like I think, you know, like we talked about music in the beginning. I love the live music and the loud music, but I had a problem with my ears after the game. So, you know, like this is such a crazy experience, especially if the team is doing good. You know, like it's one of the best places to be, you know, like in Fehérvár at the rink.
I'll just leave it at that. I really, really hope that fans will be able to enjoy, like, locally and internationally hockey in Fehérvár. Again, I wish you all the best for the off season. I thank you so much for taking the time, and see you in September.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. Good luck over there, and take care. Thanks.
Hockey O'Clock mit Martin Pfanner und die Podcast-App Fayo. For your ears only sind seit über einem halben Jahr Partner. Aus diesem Grund freut es mich besonders für insgesamt 10 Hörerinnen und oder Hörer Gutscheincodes für die Premium-Inhalte von Fayo, die Fayo Originals, anbieten zu dürfen. Die Fayo Originals bieten Hörerlebnisse auf dem nächsten Level. Außergewöhnliche Geschichten, hochwertig produziert, als spannender Talk, fesselnde Dokumentation oder einzigartiger Audio-Blockbuster. Mit einem Gutscheincode hörst du diese Premium-Inhalte, die normalerweise 5 Euro im Monat kosten, für volle 3 Monate gratis. Teile einfach eine Folge von Hock Your Clock mit dem Hashtag Hock Your Clock auf einem deiner Social-Media-Kanäle und schicke mir an @MartinPfanner auf Twitter, @MartinPfanner auf Instagram oder an hockyourclock101@gmail.com ein Belegexemplar. Die ersten 10 Einsendungen gewinnen ein dreimonatiges Fire Originals Abo, das danach auch automatisch endet. Es entstehen dir also keine Kosten. Viel Erfolg beim Mitmachen!
Back on Hockey O'Clock, back with part 3, and it's first of all with none other than Greg Holst. But coach, this is the most unusual setting of many different unusual settings we've recorded this year. We're sitting basically in the shadows of Vienna's main station. We're sitting in front of our hotel on the outside. We're sitting in a rocket chair, and it's 50 minutes past 10 p.m. What's been the strangest situation where you had to give an interview so far in your career?
Is that the question you're going to fucking ask me?
Yes. That's the first one.
Well, we're sitting here in this wooden rocking chair. This is it. And I'm glad you said, because this is freaking strange.
I could have properly introduced you, could have asked you how you're doing, but you
see, no, this
from,
is all good.
From a journalistic standpoint, I thought this needed to be the question to be asked.
Well, you know what's funny? I'm sitting here looking over at the main train station in Vienna, which is quite nice.
Which has become a second home for you.
Which has become a second home too, right? On that Iron Lung every Saturday. And no, it's all good. The hotel's really nice. And I tell you what, people are really nice and at the hotel. And I actually enjoy coming down here. It's pretty good.
Yeah,
this is a little weird though, I can tell you that.
Yeah, we got to cut them some slack because we've been staying at the Novotel at Vienna really main nice. Station since, I think, January for all our NHL games. And the great thing about this, and I know it probably pains a lot of people to hear, but at the very least, we get tested regularly. So we don't know. So we know that we're negative. But the great thing about it is that we get beer from tap there, and employees there are incredible nice.
Really nice, yeah.
So if you're ever looking for a stay in Vienna and like nice employees at a hotel, I think we both can recommend the Novotel, and they didn't pay a single dime for it. We don't even get free beer for it, but we might just tell them that we did that. Quote, anyhow.
No, it's a really different, good, no, I agree 100%.
A whole lot of different topics to be talking about, and obviously the saddest of them all, the season in Austria, the Bertelsmann Ice Hockey League, has ended. How did you watch and follow the fifth and final game in the Bertelsmann Ice Hockey League?
Well, I followed every game, obviously, right? I commentated with you the second game. The second game, right? Third game. The third game. Kartse really, really impressed me. Not just, yeah, for lots of reasons though. Like, you know, Boatswain was a good team all year, but there was something missing in Boatswain's game.
What?
No,
expand on your Kartse point. We'll get back to Boatswain.
I know they've never been a high scoring team, but they're pretty talented. But okay, let's start with Kartse. They were four lines deep. They really were. And those twins, those Geyer twins, they're kind of unsung hero kind of guys. They do their job. They chip in the goal, kill penalties. They're just kind of quietly, they've had a 12-year career. They just fit in. But what was impressive, you know, the goalie was solid. You know, a couple of shaky, a little bit of, but he was good. But when you had Posma, Fisher the whole year. And you had Strong out for a while. Then you had Schumacher in the playoffs. Like, and they played Gallant, Steffler, Vitting. These guys came up big. And I told you earlier tonight, it was the overtime game.
Game 4.
And I remember this. And I thought about this because I watched it live. Because I came down to do some Instagram. And it was in the third, I think in the last 10 minutes. Yeah, it was later in the game. It was 1-1. And Cantonacci came flying down the freaking ice, and he can skate. And he's coming down on the D, and I didn't know who it was at first. And I said, he's going to beat him on the outside. He was on his off wing. I said, he's going to blow by this guy. I mean, this could be the game-winning goal. And that defenseman played him so good, so quick, so stick on puck, or how he organized that play. And you know who it was? It was Steffler. That was actually a key moment in that victory. That's my perception of what I saw, because Cannon actually can fly when he turns it up. And that's Steffler. Who knows Steffler? Well, you know him now, because this kid, he played well. And Gallant's on. These guys are on in the last minute in a 5-4 game. I mean, talk about, I think Gallant was looking for a job. He was going to quit.
You mean Vallant?
Vallant.
Gallant used to be a head coach.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I go, God, is he coaching in Florida again? No, but Vallant, that's a big compliment to those guys and those coaching staff and the off-ice guys, how they trained all these guys. And they became a team.
Remember,
they were a team.
Remember, I told that on air during one of the finals, because I read it in one of the newspapers, that, by the way, did a tremendous job these entire playoffs. I mean, I was able to read all the newspapers on the train and then forward it to you guys. Yeah. And there's a ton of good stuff that newspapers are still digging up, be it the Kleine Zeitung, be it the Krone Zeitung, be it the Salzburger Nachrichten, Freiburger Nachrichten. There's so much good stuff out there. So if people listen to this once or twice next couple of weeks, just go out and buy a newspaper, because a lot of good people are still working for the papers, and a lot of good people are still digging up stuff and doing great things. One of the newspapers, and I think it was Kronen Zeitung, might be mistaken, could have been Kleine Zeitung, but both of them did a tremendous job throughout the playoffs. They quoted him, meaning Thomas Vallant, saying, I have to be happy that Innsbruck didn't offer me an extension. Obviously, he won the championship, but that speaks volumes about how some Austrians, and Innsbruck under Mitch O'Keefe is a whole different animal. I know that Thomas Vallant wasn't Rob Pelin's favorite defenseman, obviously. But again, still speaks volumes about Austrians that are able to play, but for reasons, don't play. And I know I'm preaching to the choir.
No. Hey, you know I'm behind the Austrians. And I always was. And of course, you have to have good imports. I mean, I love imports too. That's not the question. Who would have thought Vidin could play this good? They made him play this good on this team in that structure. So I talked to somebody yesterday in the National League. Okay, I don't have to throw a name. It doesn't really matter. I'm sure he wouldn't mind, but it doesn't matter. He said, Greg, there's a couple Austrian kids here so freaking good and don't even play in the league. So I think they have to get their chance, but you have to believe in them. You can't give them three shifts a game and expect guys to have confidence and develop. So there's not 100 out there, but there's a bunch of kids that can play, that can get the chance, that can help teams, but you need the right coach and you need the right dressing room and imports to make them feel like they can. And I'm going to take my hat off to that coaching staff, Matti Kainen and those guys there. And you know what? They were in great shape. They won battles all year. They just never stopped. Their penalty kill. And this is a big ice surface. You're not playing on NHL-sized rinks where you can get on a guy quick. These guys were so fast on the attack. Even though Boatswain got two goals in that last game power play, the PK was one of the keys. And if you reverse it, how passive was Boatswain's PK?
But how can that happen? I know I asked Daniel the same question during game 5.
And he commented
You know that you got a problem. You know that you've been having problems throughout the year and throughout the playoffs. Why don't you change it?
Well, I can't answer that. I mean, you know.
But you know how the brains of coaches are working.
Well, every coach is different, right? But I know one thing. If it's not working, like some people don't like changing lines a lot. When I coached, I honestly said, guys, if we're not doing good after a period and a half, if the lines aren't clicking, change them. Because what happens if we run into injuries all year, which we always do? Well, and all of a sudden we got to the playoffs and, you know, made the finals a few times. Everybody can play with everybody. So stop bitching, just do your freaking job. But it's a really good point because Daniel talked about it too during, you know, and Cartier's got talented players. And if you're going to give them that much time and that much space, man, it's tough because they're going to score. And they did. So why didn't they become aggressive? You know, and well, if we're going to give up easy goals, let's chase them. I don't know. And I tell you what, though, it was really hard. You got to be really, really organized on a power play. When you're under attack, I've never seen a team be that aggressive on the PK all the time. Even when it went east-west, or sometimes they just attacked. So you have to really organize your power play structure, and it's tough. So, you know, Cartier deserved this win. It's actually, I lost a few beers. I thought Boatswain might come up in that fifth game. I thought they might, but they had a problem. And the problem was Cartier.
As with every series, three different puck bounces, and it could be a whole different matter, but what's reoccurring is that team. They were the better team. We're always talking about the team. At what point did you get the feeling that Klagenfurt is the better team or is the best team in the league?
Well, I would say not that simple. Because if you really look at game two, okay, game was 6-0. Okay, Cartier was good. Boatswain wasn't. Let's erase that game. Let's go to when they lost the game 5-4. What game was that?
Two.
That was game two in Boatswain.
In Klagenfurt.
In Klagenfurt. Oh, sorry, yeah, in Klagenfurt.
Did you watch the finals?
No, game two. Well, game two. Well, my mind's in the train tomorrow already, Sim, you know. Boatswain beat themselves. It wasn't that Klagenfurt was that great in that game. Because I could dissect every goal, which I go home and do because I'm a coach and I try to, you know, have some
still
effort.
Do that to this
oh,
yes. day.
Oh no, no. Because I know the goals. The first goal, Boatswain played a good first period. And they're up 1-0. You're in the last minute, last 30, 40 seconds. Defense has got full possession, coming around the net. He knows they're getting chased. Cartier is pressuring whenever they can. You rim it, take an icing, soft pass to the corner. He had a player in position to pick up a soft rim. Gets the puck stolen. It's a mega turnover. It's a bang, bang, 1-1. Right? Now, the fifth goal, turnover in the corner. Boom. Goal. Fraser all alone in front of the net. Tip on a PK. You can't be all alone and tip it, puck in. So they probably gave them, and the coach even said that. We played a pretty good game, but you can't give them 2-3 goals. They beat themselves in that game, and that was a bit of a turning point. It really was.
But then again, if we look at other instances of the final series, and I think Terry made a good point in raising it during game or before game five, where she said they need to control their emotions. And then two stupid penalties against Mike Helmo led to two goals in the last game. Was it also the team that we are again with the better composure that won it?
100%. Because it's not easy to have composure sometimes. They felt that the referees were a little bit on Cartier's side. Is that the case if you look at all the calls? I would say maybe a little bit, not extreme, but if it's, you know, if it's a touch Cartier's way, okay. But they lost their composure for sure. And you can't take stupid penalties. I mean, Cartier had the best power play in the freaking playoffs. If you're going to do that, and you know, Cartier really did keep their composure. You know, Terry said that, eh? And that she's on the money. And I'm sure Daniel mentioned it too. But it was just like Cartier. It's not like a Cartier team that I've kind of known from over the years. So I'm going to make that compliment to Teacher, Fraser, Peterson, all these imports that fit into it, right? And accepting all these young guys coming up because they had no choice. And all of a sudden, they started believing in each other. And those coaches did a hell of a job. Hell of a job. And that Matikainen, some of his, you know, got to have balls, and some of his comments were fun and true. And you can say that in Austria, but you can't say it in Canada. And they did a hell of a job keeping these guys on focus.
Hats off to Klagenfurt, a well-deserved championship. Happy for you guys. Hopefully you can enjoy the summer. Apparently, it was a weird season with COVID-19 and celebrating a title in or after a season where a global pandemic is ruining lives and causing thousands of deaths. I mean, sports just not too important. And then again, people tell us all the time how important sports still are to them. Not that we can compare it, and probably shouldn't compare it, but do you remember how your off-season went after you brought that coveted championship to Villach in 2006?
How my off-season was?
Well, basically the first couple of days after winning the championship.
Do you know what?
You remember a lot?
Because I had, we went out though, oh my God. I had some fun too. The coach is hanging in there pretty good.
Good thing is people probably are able to hear the chair rocking.
Okay, so we're going to have to...
No, it's all good.
You know what they think it is? My knees.
Or hips.
And my hips. Oh, my hips have been acting up. And it ain't something else, I tell you that.
In all seriousness.
You know what's funny? I went for a walk the next day by myself down along the draw. I remember this. And you know what happened? I had tears in my eyes.
Out of nowhere?
No, just the...
I mean, did...
The winning. It's so hard to win. I was so close so many times as a player. Like, I came within a freaking one goal. American Hockey League Finals. Boom. Fielak here, Innsbruck. So many times. And to finally win, and the emotion you put in, and the stuff, and... It's not all roses, believe me. It's really not getting to where you got to get to. I actually was walking down by myself and I had tears in my eyes. And that is factual. I mean, you can't be afraid to have emotion about stuff. We talked about when I coached the Bantam team. And I still know those guys. This is like 1995, 96. And I couldn't talk in the meeting after because there was the emotion. These are like my kids. My wife was there and at the time. And my assistant coaches, and I had to walk out of the restaurant with all the parents there and the kids because I was freaking tearing up. But that's the emotion of the game. And that's why how I coach or passion for the kids or for the pros, you know, they don't all love you, but you do your best you can for them because it's about passion and caring about people. And I remember I went home, though, about 4 days later, 5 days later, because I want to see Taylor, my son, play in Canada. And... if I had stayed a few more days, the party would have just kept on going. It was like unbelievable. When we went downtown, those 7,000 or 8,000 people downtown at the Rat House, it was freaking unbelievable.
Tell me about that process of elation and when the pressure that you have to shoulder the entire year and keeps mounting and keeps getting bigger during the playoffs, finally falls off. It's these, the red light goes on, or the clock hits 00, or overtime goal, obviously. And you know, fuck, we're champions. How would you describe that feeling?
Well, that rink in Villach, oh my God. It was pandemonium. It was absolutely like 50,000 people cheering. We upset Red Bull. We're not supposed to win this. We went 7 with Innsbruck, as you know, we talked about that stuff. We're not supposed to win this. We're supposed to get blown out. It was special. But you know what? You think about, okay, the elation of winning, or, you know, God, piano off the back, I finally won something. Even though I'm a winner with helping people and, you know, doing the best I can, through the ups and downs of life that you learn, It wasn't all, it was dark times in my life too. But you know what's funny? When we won, the team all went to Bousquet. Kirishi was already gone down to Peraska. I went on the ice and I knew where I was going. I went right to Peraska, the goalie. And I got down, Kirishi was on his knees and Peraska was in freaking tears. And I just got down low and I said, I was not kneeling, but down low. I said, Kirishi, give me a sec. And I grabbed Peraska. And you know what he said to me? I'll never forget this. Thanks for believing in me, coach. It almost puts a tear in my eye right now, really. That's what Peraska said to me. Because we headbutted and stuff. I knew he had something and I pushed him and I pushed Kirishi. And Kirishi became a great goalie coach. He was just starting out. And I knew Peraska had something. I could feel it. And we pushed him and we argued in practice at the end. That fucking brutal practice you had, pro. Yeah. But I knew he was good. And for him to say that after all the stuff and he got us there where we had to get to, that line I will never forget my whole life. So it almost wasn't even about me anymore. It was about what he did. He was unbelievable. He was the difference. And Bousquet gets that goal. You know, it's funny, Bousquet, too. He just had that long stick, and now you know, what is this guy? Oh, got a couple more goals. He could just play. He just knew how to score. But when we had that meeting in front of 7,000 people, and Bousquet got up to talk, we all spoke on the mic, one after the other. He said something. You know what he said? It was really interesting. They're not going to call me a loser anymore. And that's what happens when so many times you're close. Even though you're in the finals, you don't win. You feel like a loser. As unfair as sports can be, you're in the Super Bowl five times and you lose it. Oh, you're a loser. Well, all the other 30 teams are home. So that's where sports can be tough, man. And Bousquet said that to the people on the mic. They're not going to call me a loser anymore. And that French accent there, eh? And it's true. So when I won, that's why next day I'm walking down, I go, God, what a feeling. And we were so close so many times as a player. It would have been fantastic. Innsbruck, one time we let it slip, but it would have been pandemonium. But you learn. You learn from all the stuff, and you do your best you can, right?
I ask Sebastian Dam, the championship-winning goaltender of Klagenfurt, the same question, if he was ever afraid of having that narrative go on that he never won a championship. And Matt Fraser, and we're recording this on the day where we did commentary on an NHL game, he said the same. He won a championship in the Western Hockey League in juniors, and now the first one as a pro. It took him 10 years, he said. That just shows how hard it is to win a championship. Now, if you look at your own career, at what point did you ever think, am I going to get a championship?
You think about it.
You do?
Yeah. It's in your mind. What? So close, so many times, finals, boom, in Fialak, boom. Finals in Innsbruck with the third league, second league, whatever. So close. But one of the biggest satisfactions I ever had was when I coached that Bantam team, I told you, in 1995 or 96, 95. And we were the Bad News Bears, and they gave us a second team, and we had a great year. We got better. We were the Bad News Bears. But we developed, and we became really tight. And I'm not talking about myself. I'm just telling a story, right, because you're asking me a question. I was out. I had a team organized. We were going to do some traveling. It was kind of a spring team. We're going up to Banff. And I got a call because we had the Kelowna Minor. We had all the coaches there, and it was a big meeting. But I was on the ice with kids. I got coach of the year for finishing in sixth place. We went from maybe last to sixth with the same. So what was it? Why did I get that coach of the year? It wasn't because I was winning hockey games, because I helped develop players. We talked about life. We became a tight team. We started beating maybe teams we shouldn't have. We just became the parents. We had a fantastic time. And to this day, if I see Stocksy and Quinn and Suk Paul, he's got the big Orchard up there, and his brother I see invites me up anytime. This is 1995. And some of these guys haven't seen me in 20 years. But if you see Holsey, tell him to come up for to grab some apples at the Orchard. That's the connection we had in 1 year of Bantam. So why did I win that award? Because it was it about winning, or was it about helping human beings be better people, work together? We had a good coaching staff. So that was a compliment to, it's not only about winning, but when you get into this, the Felix and the Klangfurtsbaum, it's about winning. It's a different bird, but you still, my opinion, we were also successful in Felix because we did have, sure, we had, you know, Pintner, Caspi, Bohm, Lancey, Kropi, but we got young guys in there, Toff and young Raffles. So I think when I walked, I'll never forget it. I walked the next day and I had tears. I was, let me not be shy. I was fucking crying. Walking down the street along the draw by myself, because I was kind of seeing the gal then, and she went back to Innsbruck, and she was there for the freaking, she was there for the win. She's down in the dressing room after the game talking to reporters. It was unbelievable. But I was crying, walking down the draw. So now you're, to your question.
I thought you'd never answer, so, but
no, to your question, I just answered the question. How big is it?
Makes you cry.
50 some years old, and you're walking down the draw, crying because you won a championship, and everything that went into it, the good, the bad, and the ugly, is freaking huge. I'm going to tell you what, who coaches New Jersey?
Lindy Ruff.
Yeah. You think if you won a Stanley Cup, you wouldn't cry?
Of course you would.
I guarantee you'd be freaking in tears. Get the bathing suits out, folks.
So that is the final
passion of the game. Here's the question I was going to ask you on TV tonight, and I didn't, because, you know, we were kind of running out, you know, with the stuff. How many NHL players, percentage-wise, never won a cup?
95.
I don't know the answer, but it's freaking high. Because some teams get on runs, right? They run. Jersey had the run. Detroit had the run. Pittsburgh had the run. Montreal used to always have the run. Two or three times, five in a row. How many players never win a championship? It's an unbelievably high stat. So when I look back at my career, yeah, you start to feel it. You're going, Jesus. Like, am I a loser? Like what Bouske said? No, I'm not. But it does get you, because you know why? There's always that couple percentage of people who question you. And those are usually people who aren't your friends or aren't your close fans. They're the people who aren't happy with themselves in their own lives. And there's a great saying in Canada, it's called misery loves company. And it's a big saying because misery does love company. And people want you to fail more than they want you to succeed. And that is true.
We're going to get a lot more wisdom as we head into the off season and have you back on Hockey O'Clock in a month from now, roundabout, as this podcast continues until, I think, the beginning of June, which is right around the time where a lot of people then fully focus, deservedly so, on hopefully a normal summer. But one thing I need to ask you, because it was your first full year as a TV pundit, as a TV expert, how was the year for you on the other side? You played, you coached, and now you're doing analysis. How was it?
It was a little bit different than I thought.
In what regard?
There was more preparation than I thought there, you know, would have to be. I could just pop on and watch a game. And so it's important to be organized. So I'm not the most organized guy in the world, as we've talked about before.
And Pintsy would attest
to that. And Kershey too, right? Because they're mega organized and stubborn too, as am I. So that was really interesting for me. But I still think you got to shoot from the hip a little bit. You have to have certain things you can chuck in there. We didn't throw in the Kraken tonight getting sued. That would have been a good one. maybe, you know, that's an interesting story. Because in the United States, everybody sues, right? I would say, after that workshop in September, because you're kind of feeling everybody out, like Flo and Mario and Boom and you and Lucas comes in and we had the referee in and Terry, I actually think I wasn't that close to Daniel because he's coaching and stuff. My connection to Terry was like really fun, and to you and Lucas, right? We actually text and have fun. We've actually become friends, and the team was one of the biggest and most important things for me. If I would have done this and felt like we didn't have a chemistry connection, you, me, Terry, Bohm, Bells, everybody, Bruno, Berndt, I wouldn't do this. I think it's no different than a hockey team or a business. You need a good dressing room. And I really think we had something that's special. I mean, we're rocking on a freaking wooden chair here in Vienna having a beer.
I'll make sure to post a photo on social media so your parents can see as well.
That'd be good. You know what I'd like to?
Are your parents on social media?
God, no, they don't even have a cell phone.
Sorry, they didn't want to interrupt.
But you know what I'd like though? I would like a picture. You know when you and me are sitting doing the game in the studio? I'd like a picture of you and me so I can send it to them. You know, and I can take a picture of it on my phone and send it to them on the email. Or a couple of pictures that they'd like to see. They heard the podcast, but they go, Greg, you're just talking. They could see me. Mom, it's a podcast. So
audio only.
Can I ask you a question too?
Sure. Shoot from the hip.
Who is the team to beat next year?
You're asking me that? You're the expert.
What's Cards say? They've set this standard freaking high. You know, Bratislava is coming in prepared because, you know, like you said, they didn't think the league was this good. So the teams are going to have to. This team is going to stay pretty well the same. You're going to have Posma back, I believe. Fisher could be. I don't know his injury situation. That's going to be the team to beat. They're going to set the standard high. And you know what they're going to set? Pressure, speed, pressure, speed. It's going to be really good.
I'd have to agree with you on that. And then again, I'm fairly curious on what Salzburg is doing. Like the first couple of signees look good.
I have then, kind of an idea.
And then it's all about the hunger that they can and will instill on the players. Because most of them and most of the players that they get rid and John Hughes probably being the most prominent one, been there, done that.
They're all gone. They're cleaning house.
Peter Schneider.
They're going to go good players. Oh,
excellent
yeah.
signing for me.
Yes.
There are a
you
couple
know why?
Of other...
Personality, speed, boom.
Never won a title.
Well,
he's... Hunger.
Hunger. No.
And I do think to a certain degree you need to have that hungriness, quote unquote, for the lack of a better word, on your team. And Salzburg might get that. And if you got like young academy players, who knows? I mean, it's a long off season and I don't want to get into too deep, but just want to call out some people finally, who are always criticizing you for saying probably, hey.
How many people criticize me? One?
Too often. Well,
one or two?
There's a message board.
It's okay, I can take it.
There are emails.
I've been through some stuff that people don't even know about in my life.
I just want to tell those people who criticize Hayes or too many of them, how about you learning two more languages to your native one, the mother tongue, and how about you doing commentary in that third one? You speak English and French. Those are the first two languages, fluently. And then you had
well,
to learn...
Well, mon français pas pire, mais j'ai pas pratiqué. J'ai pas pratiqué un petit peu, ouais.
And then you had to learn German. And just imagine him doing commentary for a sports event on a game in your third language impresses the heck out of me. Hopefully, a couple of people out there would go like, yeah, wow, three languages. I don't even speak two fluently. So maybe it will do the trick, even though I never thought that hey was too much. I got so many more things that, that people rightfully so would point to that I'm never gonna get rid of, because I just can't. Because once you got your eyes set or your mind set on something, it's awfully hard to get rid of it. But I always, and that's from the bottom of my heart, enjoy doing commentary with you. I always like at the very end of a game, say nothing better than to accompany hockey with you. And
I'm not done, eh? By the way,
no, you're not.
But thank
no,
you.
No.
Thank you for the call.
Gotta give credit sometime where credit is due, and just coming off a game and doing a lot more games, obviously with the NHL on Pulse 24. Just wanted to say it's always great talking hockey with you.
No, I appreciate all that. And can I answer that question about the Hayes?
Sure.
Because I go home and I'm self-critical. Don't think I'm not.
I'm as well. And I don't want to make this the whole Symphana Love Fest, you know?
No, God, no. So even though we're on this freaking rocking chair together, fuck's sakes, come on, Paul Kettle here. People don't know what that is, but I tried to subconsciously or consciously not go, and I know I did that over the last couple of years with other interviews or talks. And here, I think I'm really good with that. And I didn't even realize I was throwing the hay. There's an old saying at home, hay is for horses, right? But I didn't know I was throwing it in. And I think if somebody points it out and they don't like it, and that's their prerogative. And I go, does it fit in to... Then I listen to the guys commentate the NHL and talk all the time, like every day, middle of the night. Sometimes I'm up watching games and they talk. Do they throw the hey word in or No, they're taught not to. So I'm good with that. It's good that people point it out. And I appreciate you saying, you know, three lines. But I can honestly tell you, can I tell you what? I'm a little disappointed in myself sometimes because I can't articulate myself on situations and words that I want to use, that I could use in English, that I want to throw in German. So you know what I have to do? I have to get better myself. It's up to me to get better at that. So I don't mind this criticism. Hey, if I could tell you my whole life story.
There it is.
My whole life story? This is a freaking piece of cake. Some, a couple of people saying, hey, tell them to use a haze. If they were in my boots certain times in my life, maybe they wouldn't survive. So life is all about ups and downs, dark times, good times, fantastic times. So that stuff really doesn't bother me. I kind of get a kick out of it. But if that's their opinion, that's okay. But I know down deep in me, I want to get a little better at what I'm doing.
Same here.
I just don't want to be another pretty face.
No. I.
Hey, which ain't going
to
happen.
For whatever reason, you're bumping me. There's no pretty face to you, right?
Let me ask you a question, Mark.
Sure.
You didn't, it was funny because when you contacted me in the summer, right? I won't tell you how you got my number, but it's okay. It was from my ex. That's fine. From Cindy. It doesn't matter. That's truthful.
Well, you know, now I need to tell that story. I mean, Okay. Obviously we...
Yeah, well, how do we connect?
We wanted to put together a team of candidates that might be good enough to be experts on Pulse 24. And we got a lot of different directions, candidates, but I knew and higher ups agreed that we needed to have an expert on playing on the ice, an expert on goaltending, and an expert on coaching. Now, problem is it's awfully hard to find someone who's coached on the highest level, who had success on the highest level, and who spoke German.
And played.
And, well, not necessarily played. Okay. I mean, look at John Cooper. Like, you'd get John Cooper.
Look at Hitchcock.
Of course. Like, they
Scotty Bowman got hurt young, never really played, you know.
Matt McAvoy.
Yeah.
So,
short stints as players, yeah.
Right, so we knew.
Okay, so my playing career wasn't even really in... in the focus.
It helped. But, okay, that's weird.
Because I played here too.
We never really talked about this. No, in all honesty, three branches, three kind of experts, but the more well-rounded their game and their career and everything is, the more obviously it helps the purpose. And I kept thinking, kept pondering, okay, who's a coach who won maybe a title or two, who's German speaking? First one that came to mind was Tom Pokal.
Right.
Just won a championship with, just 7 years ago, it's been that long, with Bolzano. But then I'm like, no, Tom Pokal is happy in Straubing and he's doing a hell of a job, even though he got ousted like in the most brutal way possible in the playoffs today.
What a story that is.
Oh, yeah. We'll get to that on another day.
Okay.
But Pokal not available. Well, who coached, who won titles, who's German speaking, and if you narrow down the list, Greg Holtz popped up, and I'm like, of course.
How did that pop up, though?
Well, just going down the ranks. I mean,
oh, you're just looking at names and.
Of course.
Okay.
And I'm like,
in the phone book?
Shoot, Greg Holtz. No. Just on who won titles in Austria.
Oh, actually, right.
Germany,
okay, yeah, looking at the hockey stats. Okay.
Who's available. And.
Where's Holtz kicking around? Is he alive?
And what's he been up to? He left the league. And I remembered, and that happened during last summer, that I got you on one of our shows with previous TV station that owned the rights in Innsbruck. And when I was getting you on the show, I was texting with someone, and I don't remember who it was.
Was that when I talked to Velzer?
That very well could have been the case.
After he had his thing?
Yes.
Yes, it was. In behind the net. Yes, it was.
And we got you on the show. And then you invoiced your train tickets and your hotel room and everything like that. And you didn't write me directly. It was your former girlfriend that sent me the receipts. And I'm like, okay, I'll pass this on.
Oh, that's what it was.
And last summer, I'm like, how do I get in contact with Greg Holtz? Let's just try his girlfriend. Didn't know that it's the ex-girlfriend at that time, but she gets back to me and says, well, here's Greg's number, and it's a late June, early July summer day.
It was late. Yeah,
it was still sunny and bright in Austria. It was of course sunny and bright in Canada. We touched base, you go back to me, and we're like, well, there might be this opportunity. And as everybody else, you had to go through an audition. As everybody else, this audition was graded. And at the very end, the higher ups felt most comfortable with you getting, not that it's the coaching gig, but you getting one of the three or four spots. And they felt confident enough that Terry would be able to get one of the spots, and Daniel. And then we got a late addition with obviously the National Hockey League rights and Phil Lucas to everything, and then everybody feels more than happy, as far as I could gather, myself included, with the choices that we had. But that's how you got back to Austria, and that's.
But do you realize though that even though there was a pot. You did give me, you said, well, how much time do you have to think about this? We talked, you know, about, you know, the situation.
During a pandemic?
No, and I said, well, how much time do I have? And it took a couple of weeks. I said, well, and it finally came down, can we get a, you know, answer by next Friday? And then next Friday, it was about 3 weeks. And I said, okay, you know what, Martin, I think I'd like to do this. Well, that's great. But I don't know if I can get there. And I went to Kelowna. I went to the... I asked the doctor. I went to the big tent to get a COVID test to be able to fly to Europe to work. No. Can I pay for it? No. I said, Martin, I don't know if I can get there.
You had to take a test in Montreal, didn't you?
I talked to my sister and she said, I don't know. She phoned a private hospital or doctor. And yes, you can do a private test for $199. Okay, so make me a date. So I flew to Montreal, which was great. See my parents anyway, which I wanted to. some friends, my buddies. We went golfing. I spent a week in Montreal. And that, I couldn't get out of Kelowna. So I didn't know if I could come. Got to Montreal. And then I flew to Germany. This is crazy. I flew to freaking Germany. And I had all my stuff, all my papers and my luggage in my carry-on. And she says, would you want to put your carry-on too? Because it's kind of heavy. Move it down. I said, okay. Oh my God, I got to get to the freaking border in Germany. I have all my stuff, COVID test, everything is in the luggage. I'm not going to get in the country. But I had one thing in my phone, and she was great. Dilski picked me up, took me home. But it was close not getting here. I really enjoy, you know what, like I said before, I learned stuff this year. I got to get a little bit sharper on some words. I know that. Because I'm so... I'm self-critical.
Me as well, hopefully.
And you know what? The team was real fun. The team was, you know, it's all about humor and laughing and doing some stuff, getting better. But, you know, the world's in COVID. I mean, this is a tough time in life. And I hope I added a little bit of humor to the situation and my personality. And, you know, I'm usually pretty upbeat. And I think you enjoyed our team, right? I think it was good, eh?
Most definitely. We need to stop this. It sounds like a farewell. And the good thing is you'll stay and remain on air for continuation of the NHL season. We're going to have you for the entirety of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
This is going to be good.
And
this is going to be good. People have no idea.
This is
people have no idea what's coming.
This is going to be effing great. So I think I'll leave it at that. Again, we're going to have you back in three weeks' time. I'm going to take a photo right now of the quote-unquote interview situation that we just experienced. Thank you so much for promoting the sport of ice hockey, for doing everything that you do. Always a pleasure talking hockey with you.
Thank you. Can I end up on one note?
One note.
My hat's off to Cartier. They have set the bar next year in this league, how to organize a team and how to play the game.
Couldn't have said it any better. Das war Hockey O'Clock in der aktuellen Folge. Natürlich gibt es auch wieder kommende Woche eine Folge dort dann mit einem Überraschungsgast. So viel steht schon einmal fest. Bis Dienstag in einer Woche. Von.